I'm Edwina Farley and this is A Country Breakfast on RN. This morning it's an Easter feast of chocolate and lunar wine.
We are at about a three-quarter moon, so that we well away from unwelcome influences from a full moon. We're away from an impending lunar eclipse. Also, it's apogee, so the moon's influence is minimal. We see that as a way to make sure we have good concentration in the fruit.
Deciphering the ins and outs of making biodynamic wine in the midst of a Canberra vineyard a little later. First though, let's find out the news of the week. Kath McAloon joins us. Morning, Kath.
Good morning, Edwina.
Now, this is not the sexiest of news stories, but the release this week of Ian Harper's competition review has some pretty significant implications for farmers.
It's being hailed as one of the biggest shake-ups of Australia's economy in more than 20 years. The recommendations are huge and they're varied, and some industries are worried about the impact if the federal government does change the law, as has been recommended. For farmers, it could mean they'd have more flexibility to collectively bargain. So the proposal would see similar small businesses being able to group together in negotiations with processors. And the ACCC has recently allowed dairy farmers and poultry producers and potato growers to bargain collectively, but it has been limited because of laws against price setting. And the National Farmers Federation's Tony Maher says that if this was adopted by the government, this recommendation for collective bargaining, it could lead to big changes for farmers and it could allow them to boycott particular markets.
Instead of accepting a price, they would potentially get together and say, well, we're not going to accept that price and we would boycott that market. And I think there's a series of provisions that would need to go with that. But it effectively allows them to, again, have that scale and a bit more balance in the marketplace.
One of the other key elements of this, when we sort of look at market power and in particular the dominance of the two major supermarkets, was something called an effects test. What is that?
So the effects test is basically a requirement on big businesses to prove that their actions aren't lessening competition in the market. So farmers would be happy with this because it gives them a bit more power, I guess, in their negotiations with the two big supermarkets. But perhaps as expected, the body that represents these major retailers has rejected this test. They say that it would have a chilling effect on competition and that it would dampen pro-competitive behaviour. But Liberal backbencher Dan Tehan, who chairs the Coalition's Agricultural Backbench Committee, he says that both consumers and farmers who supply the supermarkets can benefit from the proposed changes to competition law. He says it's all about getting the balance right.
It can be both, and what we need to ensure is that if we have proper competition in the marketplace, then that not only benefits consumer, but benefits the producer as well, and that is what we are all seeking.
One of the other heavy tomes of paperwork that we had to wade through this week was the tax discussion paper released by the Treasurer, and it included a focus on wine.
An interesting thing that came out of this tax discussion paper released by Treasurer Joe Hockey was the current tax on alcohol, and it's really varied. Different types of alcohol are taxed at different rates, and this paper claims that if you're drinking a standard glass of wine out of a cask, the price of that includes just about 5 cents of tax, compared to if you were having a ready-to-drink beverage that might involve a spirit and something else ready-to-drink all mixed up together. And that includes almost a dollar of tax.
Now, That's a big difference, isn't it?
And some of the companies that make spirits are calling for a flat tax on all alcohol across the board. But Mitchell Taylor of the Winemakers Federation of Australia says that a flat tax on alcohol wouldn't be fair for winemakers.
Most of the Australian wineries at the moment are barely breaking even. Most of them aren't profitable. But this would really plunge all of them into the deep red. Half of Australia's winemakers would probably have to close down overnight. We've already got an oversupply in grapes, so it would also put pressure on the growers. A lot of growers would be forced to the wall.
It's been a very big week for the dairy industry globally, with some huge changes to how it operates in Europe.
During the week, the EU ended its milk quota system, which has been in place for 30 years, and it had been imposing a limit on the amount of milk that farmers in the EU could produce. And we saw after this quota was lifted that world dairy prices were decimated. In the first day of trading after the quotas came off, the global dairy trade, which is an online futures market for dairy, it fell about 10.8%. And that result will really concern Australian dairy farmers because milk processors here are currently working out what their next season's milk price will be when the new financial year starts.
Yes, there's a bit of nervousness around that. Are there any other reasons that we can point
to? Yeah, well, the volatility may also be attributed to what's happening in China, and news this week that China, which is the world's largest dairy buyer, is pulling back from buying whole milk powder, which is in fact the most popular sort of dairy product in the market. It's thought that China has large stocks of milk powder and it hasn't been buying as much while world dairy production has increased. New Zealand dairy company Fonterra has been hit particularly hard, and their revenue from China in the first half of the financial year was slashed by almost $2 billion. Steve Spencer is a consultant with firm Fresh Agenda, and he says Fonterra has struggled to find other markets for its milk supply.
I'd say there's a fair bit in some sheds in New Zealand to start off with. But, you know, there's increased business in the rest of Asia, the rest of the world. So they're, you know, in terms of share, they've certainly helped mitigate some of the problem by pushing elsewhere.
We've heard a little bit about banana recovery in various parts of Australia with some rough weather. There's also some news on one of Australia's largest meat processors.
JBS, which is Australia's largest meat processor, has one of its big processing plants at Rockhampton, and it was really severely damaged by Tropical Cyclone Marsha. There were sort of complicating problems there because parts of the building had asbestos, so when the cyclone came through and caused damage, there's been a big clean-up process, and no cattle have been able to be processed at that abattoir for 6 weeks, but it's on track to open next week, and JBS's John Berry says it will be business as usual after the Easter break, and they'll be having a full kill of 700 head.
Obviously, that's benefiting to hear for the producers and also the 500 employees that we'll have back to work next week. We're looking to make sure that, you know, the team gets up there and going next week and putting incomes back into their pockets, their families' pockets, and also the economy of Rockhampton.
A nice story out of WA about an innovative way of using bananas that were damaged by a cyclone.
After Cyclone Olwen went through the Gascoyne region, some of the members of a banana growers cooperative up in that area, the Sweeter Banana Co-op, they actually went out and salvaged the damaged bananas that they could, and they froze them, and now they're making banana bread out of out of the frozen bananas. Yeah, and the banana cooperative's Doriana Mangali says that the bread will provide a small amount of income to cover their costs for this foreseeable future.
We are have a packing shed we need to pay rent on and insurance and some staff that we want to keep over this period where we don't have any income, and the banana bread will help to sustain that, create us with a little bit of turnover and revenue.
Now, there are no lengths to which a sniffer dog will go to uncover something suspicious or bad.
Yeah, dogs have traditionally been trained to sniff out drugs and explosives, even missing people, but their new target could be phylloxera, which is a devastating disease that feeds on the roots of vines and can eventually kill an entire vineyard. It's been in Australia since the 1800s, and it's been a real issue for the wine industry. Now, Sonia Neitz, who's a Melbourne University viticultural and animal science researcher, has phylloxera in her sights. She says that she reckons she can train any breed of dog to be able to find phylloxera, and it would have big implications. And it doesn't need to be any sort of particular dog. Sonia says even the crazy ones will do.
In fact, the best dogs that we can use are the ones that are slightly out of control, that people think this dog is useless. That's the dog that we want. That those hyperactive, mad case dogs that you think you can't train, they're quite often the best dogs for this sort of work. They desperately need a job.
I can't imagine there's many other callings for them.
For those mad case dogs.
Yes, that's lovely. Thanks, Kath.
Thanks, Edwina.
You can find those stories online at abc.net.au/rural.